Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable, and thank you very much for being with us. I hope you all had a lovely holiday. It was very nice to be away, but it's very nice to be back. So we love you. We missed you, and we have a great show scheduled for you today. So we'll see how we don't screw it up. Hope you all had a very nice time, a very nice holiday, however you spent it. I know the weather was a little onerous at sometimes, but at some points.
There you go.
Unless you're a kid or a kid at heart.
Yeah, well, I don't know. You know, we didn't have to go anywhere, so it was lovely. But I don't, and we got, I don't, we got a couple, we got feet.
Feet.
We got feet. So from, Friday, and then we got hit again on Saturday into Sunday.
Now, how tall are you?
Or Sunday into Monday. I'm 6'6", sir.
So you're 6'6". So here I am at 5', maybe 6 and going down, maybe 5, maybe 4, who knows. So the snow is almost over my head here, you know. So you are, you're different. You could, you know, it just comes up to your knee. In my case, it comes up to my shoulders.
No, that's true. Well, yeah.
When you can't go to Erie, Pennsylvania.
When you have those snow barriers, you can look over. Yeah, that's true. Well, hopefully, again, you all had a lovely, lovely holiday. We still have more to celebrate, and we'll be doing that. And we thank you very much for being with us this morning. Let me introduce the panel to you. Teresa Bourgeois is here. She is a communications consultant. She joins us each and every Wednesday. We're thrilled to have her today, which... I know this screwed me up because I even had the wrong day on my pill container because I'm so messed up on the days of the week. But it's a Wednesday. And Teresa, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Delighted to be here.
Very nice to have you here. Jen Smith is with us. She is a reporter for the Berkshire Eagle. She also joins us each and every Wednesday, and we're thrilled. Hopefully you got some time off, a little tiny bit.
A little bit. Yeah. It was nice.
But good. Not from the bakery, right?
I did a little baking. I did a little working at the Eagle, and you know, you just got to check up on things, but...
Yeah.
Just make sure nobody... does whatever. I don't know. It's a slow news.
The very snowy Christmas day. Yeah. I did cop calls from home because my street hadn't been plowed yet, and my snow tires get installed today. So
a lot of snow tires getting installed today.
But there was no one out. I didn't hear a car go down my road until about 1 in the afternoon.
Well, welcome. It's very nice to have you here. I'm glad you made it over from the Berkshires. Also joining us from the Berkshires is WAMC's Alan Shartok. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, and I'm buoyed, to be honest with you, Joe, because of what we have seen coming in over the weekend in terms of money to pay for the tower. It's incredible how much money is coming in. I mean, I think everybody gets that this is the continuation of WAMC, and that if we can do this, we can have something that is a lifetime guarantee, as much as that is possible, of our future as a radio station. It's the most exciting thing since I got here, and I got here around 1979, and it is unbelievably important to all of us that everybody just sort of digs in, does something, and we're getting to a magical place. I can tell you that now. Now, this is the last, 3 or 4 days before the end of deductions. Think about that. So not that I think people are giving because of that. I don't. I think people are giving it because they have heard the clarion call that this is our future. But I think that most people are giving now because they're concerned about the station, they love the station, they listen to the station. And on the other hand, I know that there are a few people who can take a deduction right now and be very generous with it and say, this is my station, I'm going to do something extraordinary here. We have seen a few pledges for $5,000 and $1,000. In one case, I believe $10,000. This is but everybody getting in on it right now makes all the difference in the world. And it would be great if we could finish $1 million of the $2 million fund drive by how many more days do we have?
To the end of the year.
Yeah.
We have Sunday is New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
So that would be the end of it.
Right.
So really Saturday.
Through Saturday. So what is that?
The 30th.
Today?
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
I don't have, yeah.
So
yeah.
Today no, would you be get,
yeah, I'm looking at my
That's
fingers.
Right. No, you can do four fingers. Yeah. Right.
Now here's the deal.
Less than a hand away.
No. Thank you, Teresa. Now here's the deal, that just so everybody knows. It's best, you can do it by calling 1-800-323-9262. We'll be glad to do it that way. You can do it by check. Just make sure you make sure that the date is on the top of the check that you send it on.
318 Central Avenue.
318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. Or you can do the most incredible thing of all. Go right online at WAMC.org and do it that way, which is the way that most people are doing it now. And that money has been rushing in. And that way, it's not a matter of enough people standing by, but we would love you to do it. It would be great. And we thank you.
Now, let me to focus on one thing about the importance of this tower. Just give people an idea of what we're doing here. If you're just joining us and you're traveling and you're back and whatever the case may be, of what a big deal this is. The tower that we're currently on, we're a rentee.
We were. We were a rentee from WTN, from
Channel 10, yep.
Which is taking Channel 19 transmitter off of the tower, and was great about selling it to us, and we are so pleased about that. But now, for once, we won't be a renter. We'll be an owner. Or as the old song goes, never mind.
Yes, okay.
Oh,
but the point.
No. The point really is this is our future, and for once we will never cast. If we moved a few feet in either direction, most of you would not be able to hear us. So if somebody had come on because of the guarantee of the wattage that we had, if somebody had come along and bought the tower and said you have to move, we would have been gone. That's why this is so important. We spent almost all the money we had in our savings, and that's about 3 months' worth, on buying the tower. We have spent the money, but now there is nothing in the cupboard, and that's why we need to ask you to make sure to continue it. We do it. Now, Joe, is there another question?
No, I just want to point out something, and I'm sure people will be writing about this, but, Alan secured this for us, and it was just amazing of seeing the machinations that went through to make sure that this all happened. And because, as Alan mentioned, it's the future of the radio station, so it makes sense. To your point earlier, though, about people coming out, I have just in my brief interactions with human beings, which were brief over the holiday, I didn't leave the house much, but it was mostly snow, and then had a little bit to do with me just being a loner. But
the general store.
but you go in. But I was at church on Christmas Eve and throughout the village and just going around, and everywhere I went, that's all people were talking about was the tower. And there's an excitement, and the excitement is building, and I just think that's lovely, and it speaks volumes as to what has been built. And we're very, very excited. Now,
we are so
I was
excited.
Thinking about the.
Okay, come here. Come over here. Come over here. No.
Careful now.
Merry Christmas. All right. So now, as we're sitting here and we're talking about the importance of the tower, and my God, you know the drill. WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. The thing I wanted to start off with, okay, give him a big hug.
I can't get it.
Oh, sure you can. All right. Our holiday present to you, ladies and gentlemen, is that it was a little late, I'll say, but it was it arrived, and we're more than a little excited. Rosemary Armeo is in the studio.
I'm in the studio. It's so cool. But you forgot to remind me about the 15 to 20 minutes needed for scraping ice off windshields.
Exactly.
I've been in the desert. I'm out of practice.
All right. I'll remember that next time. I didn't think I...
So there was, it was zero outside my house. I get out, and for once, I left the car outside, and these ice crystals had on the
so
thing.
Yes, so thick today.
But it hadn't snowed, but ice crystals, you couldn't see through the mirror, the window. So there I'm at 0 degrees, warming up the car, waiting for it, trying the windshield to make it go away, but it doesn't, of course. And all of that is happening. And then you have this thing where you're freezing to death.
Yeah. You are I have no gloves anymore. My hands are going to fall off. Yeah.
You're not ready. Well,
you look terrific, by the way.
Well, yeah, you look.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be back.
You know, you look happy.
I look happy?
Yeah.
That's only because I'm here with you guys.
Okay. Well, that's good. Well, we're thrilled to have you. So let's just take a moment before we get into the stories of the day, and I'm just going to grill you a little bit.
Okay. So
what have you been up to? What brings you back? And I assume you're not here for good. You're going
to
go.
I'm leaving on Friday again to go back first to Sarajevo and then back to Amman, Jordan. And I'm working with Arab Reporters for Investigative Journalism. Even though I speak no Arabic, we work with interpreters and, you know, kind of Google Translate, and I'm helping them to question authority and tell the truth. So it's like, as
what
you know, my
learn?
Personal protest to against the attack on truth and journalism here in the United States.
Well, it's again, it's wonderful to have you here.
Yeah,
it's good really
to be here.
Very
There's
very
a lot
fun.
Happening in.
Yeah, there is. All right, so let's get to it. So we'll start with the UN and the UN budget cuts highlights the new U.S. approach. When the Trump administration claimed credit this week for budget cuts at the United Nations, some critics of the organization saw the prudent oversight of taxpayer money, while others questioned Washington's determination to be seen wielding a big stick. The U.S. mission to the United Nations on Sunday hailed the operating budget of $5.3 billion for 2018 and 2019, slightly less than the $5.4 requested by the Secretary General. In a statement, the mission said the United States had negotiated $285 million in cost savings, as well as reducing, their word now, bloated management and support functions. We'll no longer let the generosity of the American people be taken advantage of or remain unchecked, according to the quote from U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley, calling them cost-cutting historic and promising more to come. Rosemary Armijo.
Oh, I get to go first. Okay, yeah,
absolutely.
First, the whole thing is disingenuous. Cost-cutting at the UN has been a global concern, and many countries have been working on it. The budget that the United States has agreed to is only slightly less than what the United Nations had asked for in the first place. More troubling, it's one more sign that the United States intends not to use diplomacy as we have known it and practiced it in the past, but simply to be a bully. You want our money, do what we say, which is deeply, deeply troubling, along with the scooping out of the insides, the guts of the State Department. And the other thing is that I hope people keep in mind that peacekeeping functions, which the United States helps to fund, are very cheap. If you've read it all, as I have, about the Rwandan genocide, $30 million, less than the cost of a few trips to Mar-a-Lago, would have allowed the United States to stop the murder of 1 million people in Rwanda. And we didn't do it. So cost cutting is not the issue here. Do not be blinded by that. We're not becoming more efficient. We're not becoming a better organization. We're not putting America or anybody else first. This is just mean-spirited.
Alan.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say welcome back, Rosemary. And what she said, you know, what she said. I agree with every word you've said. But there's also something else that needs to be done here. This, again, is the cheap playing to the base that this guy, Trump, has done from the very beginning. Wouldn't you have liked to have been a fly on the phone listening to the president and his instructions to Nikki Haley as to what she's going to say? Now, this is a woman who I truly believe wants to run for president of the United States herself someday. So she's got to sort of play it on the one hand. Teresa's nodding.
No, I agree with you, but I think once she talked about, you know, the retribution, she was done.
Yeah.
But
well,
I absolutely agree with you. She has aspirations. But
it may well happen, and you can never say never, and I can prove that to all of you by the fact that Donald Trump is the president.
No, I agree with you. She has aspirations.
Yeah. So this is playing to the base, so they cut as Rosemary has put it exactly right. This is nothing compared to the billions that we are asked to invest in this. And we have invested in the United Nations. But it does do a terrible thing to the underlayment of faith in the United Nations by saying that. And it turns a great number of people in the United States against it. Look, it's never been a popular institution in this country. So this is a terrible thing.
I think it'll be more interesting to see, you know, if the U.S. makes any more gestures that affect actual oversight of what the U.N. is spending. And also, you know, if we're technically saving money by this budget cut, where is that money going to be going?
Because defense, we know that.
And exactly, you know, and I think that's something to absolutely watchdog after the recent defense spending bill signed into action. I think it's going to fund that. Yep. And, you know, I don't think it's going to go, we're not depositing it right back into our, towards our national deficit.
All right, let's take a pause. We will take a break. We'll catch up with Rosemary, find out what's going on, and we'll be back with you in just a few moments after BBC News. We'll return. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Lovely to have you with us on this Wednesday morning, and it is the 27th of December. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Teresa Bourgeois, and Rosemary Armeo is back, and we couldn't be more thrilled.
Drop-in guest.
Very nice. Yeah, I feel I was thinking as it was too difficult to pick up that quick, but I just sort of wanted like that Bob Hope drop-in music that he used to do when he would visit Johnny on The Tonight Show. Just like come in, do a, hey, I got a special on Friday, good night. It's good to have you here. So we've been talking about the UN. Teresa, you haven't weighed in on this. We'll let you do that, and then we'll go to some letters.
I think this just further weakens the U.S. standing in the world. I think that people who are experts know that they're not telling the truth, as Rosemary said. This is cuts that were negotiated, changes that have been negotiated amongst a lot of people for a long time. And so I think just that in combination with the recent votes against them show the weakening of the U.S. and the lack of understanding of the importance of diplomacy and really the further evidence of the rise of China around the world. Yep. China's really rising. That's one of the things that Donald Trump has done. He's really pulled the U.S. off onto the sidelines and paved the way for China's rising, and we see it all over the world.
When you look at the, I'm interested, and I'll probably be inserting a couple of these questions in throughout the morning because I'm interested. But since we've had you on the phone a couple of times, we've talked about different things. But has there been a story that you've really missed talking about?
Oh, that's, you know, I don't talk about Trump over there, and I've been cruising,
that's
too.
That's all we talk about.
I know. I see the letters that come in. Can't you find anything else to talk about? You know, Yemen is huge. Syria is huge. We don't talk about Syria at all here anymore, and that's disgraceful.
I think Yemen. Talk about Yemen. Well, I think Yemen is a story that's being missed.
Yeah. Although I will say that we thanks to Teresa, we've talked about it quite a bit, but
Yemen you have. I think Syria, too, we have ceded that to the Russians, and they're doing horrible things. People are suffering in Jordan, which accepts refugees from all over. It's filled with Yemenis and Syrian people who cannot get back and will not be able to go back maybe for a long time.
And there's no sustainable plan. It's pretty much a dead end while you land there, and I think it's really troublesome for, if you look at the population that they're young. That's not an aging
and
population.
We have
there.
A young editor who's working in Amman right now. And, you know, they asked me, how are you doing? And I complained about, oh, my son burns a little achy on my face. And his house, his family home, had been bombed. His father and his sister were both badly injured. The house is destroyed. They're now moved in with uncles and aunts. He can't even go back home to see how they're doing. So that's what people are dealing with every day.
If you could, the AP just did this amazing piece about Mosul. You know, there's a big, aren't we great that drove ISIS out of Mosul? But the question is, where did they go to and at what cost?
Right.
They said the number of civilian deaths dramatically underreported. You know, there are 12,000 civilian dead when we're saying 300 to 400, and yeah. that is U.S. funded bombing. So what is it? What is the worldview of that?
I don't know about the worldview. I mean, my view has been from the Arab world, which is, you know, there's great hatred and suspicion of the United States because of all this. We are not increasing our stature in the world. I can tell you that. And then you might add the recognition of Jerusalem as the capital,
Guatemala the other day.
Guatemala, yeah. There's good. Having allies, yeah. That's really impressive. It's like the metric system. Who backs us on that?
I mean, the vice president can't go to Jerusalem, and the president can't go to London. I mean, that's how much things have changed in the last year.
Yeah. So, if it were working, I mean, I'd be here saying, oh, I was really wrong about Donald Trump. You know, we were right to flash that big stick like Teddy Roosevelt did. But it is not working. The world does not need the United States. And it is clearly under Angela Merkel and China especially learning how to build power and support without the U.S. involvement. That's not good for us.
So, you know, Rosemary, Egypt is either the first or second large, Israel, I think maybe
recipient.
The first, recipient of U.S. aid. And Egypt is thumbing its nose at the United States. What choice do they have in terms of the Arab world? What do you make of that?
Yeah, the two evil players, I think, in the Middle East are Saudi Arabia, another one that Trump has coddled up to, and Egypt. There's no journalism in Egypt anymore. It's getting to be like Syria. Many of those journalists are struggling to work from in exile, basically. You can't write any kind of criticism. And that's just the journalism, you know, aside from life in general. And we're supporting that. So why? What to what advantage? We don't have support of the people. We're not now getting support from Sisi, from the government. So why? That would be a place I'd love to be changing aid.
And I worry about Turkey, too. It's always been tenuous. And then the pressure this puts on places like Jordan and Lebanon. I mean, you can speak to that.
You know, I've always in the good old days when Rosemary was here every day, I would often tease her for throwing a grenade in at the end of a conversation that
yes.
you know warranted
we didn't have time to talk
warranted a 40-minute discussion. But do you see? So I'm probably guilty of doing the same thing right now. But do you see of what we're doing as a country that there is a strategy? Or is it just incompetence?
If I could see a strategy, even if I disagreed with it, I would feel more comforted than I do. Did I hit the button?
Yeah, you're good. Yeah, there we go. Blue one. Yep, go ahead.
I was saying that I would feel more comforted if I could see a strategy, even one that I strenuously disagreed with. I don't. Do you?
Well, yeah, there's a political strategy here, obviously. So that if you take a choice, if you give a choice to Americans about the Arab countries versus Israel, for example, you would find that there aren't that many politicians who are willing to take that risk by going there because they know that the Arab countries are just not that popular in this country. So once again, it's going to the base as opposed to going to the international relations that this country so needs, at least in the long run we need.
But do you think anybody distinguishes between, globally, around the world, a perception of Trump versus the United States in general?
Yes.
That's one thing that I think there might be a distinction between what he says and what the American people feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking especially of in Arabs, for example, of people who understand that the people are not the same as government. They've had lousy government for a long time. And so, yes, they do make a distinction between the people and the government. Mm-hmm.
So do you find that the United States, Rosemary, is unpopular now? Because, you know, there are a lot of people who make that distinction, who say, we love the country, but we don't like Trump or we don't like.
Yeah, I find that we're kind of a source of humor, comedy. Like, oh, ha, ha, so now you're seeing what we had to put up with all these
in Italy,
that
for
kind
example.
Of
yes. Yeah.
Yes. I absolutely agree. And I think that there are other policies that we don't talk about. We don't talk about the effects of our policies on international relations and international operations. You know, I think, you know, if you talk about... you know, I think the bigger issue to talk about anytime my foreign friends talk with me, it's about drones. You know, when is the U.S. drone policy going to change? When are people going to stop dying? Mm-hmm. And especially in the area that you're in, I've traveled through Pakistan, and that was the first question that anyone asked me. Where are you from? Like, are you from New York City? And what is your stance on drones?
Yep.
Those were the big things on people's minds.
And look what's happening this week. Negotiations between Pakistan and Afghanistan, and who's leading those negotiations?
Pakistan,
not the U.S.
India too, and China.
And China. Mm-hmm. It's China. Pakistan, sure. India, yeah. China.
And China's never China's, been. Never
China's
been.
Leading
I think
those
we're seeing so many phenomenally interesting changes. It's not the usual predictions. You can't take like, oh, you know, U.S. is going to step in and take the stance. I mean, to see China step up and try to put on the diplomacy hat and in a place that it's never been before is fascinating to me also very strategic of them. I think if you were listening to any of the NPR stuff this morning, you heard a lot about you know, why that's the case.
Speak into the microphone.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Alan has a couple letters. We'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable, panel@wamc.org, for your letters. And we welcome your letters, and we go now to a couple of them.
Okay. Leslie says, the damage will be long-lasting. The multitude of ways this administration has damaged this country is overwhelming. The damage will be long-lasting and will not be corrected by Trump's removal. Everything Trump touches, he damages. The announcement this morning that they will name a train station in Israel after Trump is distressing. I've always supported Israel. But this gives me pause. Trump is a vile racist. It saddens me to see the current Israeli administration honor someone who is almost universally viewed with contempt.
I talked to an Italian friend we asked her about Berlusconi. Trump is very like Berlusconi, the Italian president. And she said, what you don't know is that it takes years to recover. After he's out, he's been disgraced and is out. But the civil discourse is all coarse. All of the evil, bigoted, intolerant thoughts that are now allowed to be expressed openly.
Encouraged.
It doesn't go away right away. Yeah. She said they're still struggling with that. He ruined life and civil discourse in Italy for a long time to come. Thank you, Mr. Trump.
This is from Jeannie, who says foreign strategy. Who gains by does our foreign policy strategy failures? And I guess there's a little bit of problem with the way that was came out, but it's Russia, says Jeannie.
Russia,
I think not only
China.
Russia, but China. Yeah.
China's
big time,
rising.
Big time. Yeah. What I'm finding fascinating about the Chinese actually is it the old Mao, you know, we got to take over the world by our international relations, or is it China, who has invested so much in the United States and so many other places, that is now saying if we can play the role of an honest broker, we can gain a lot more than the old way? Are you following?
Well, I think they're being absolutely strategic and entrepreneurial about this. They are not bombing people. There's not drone strikes. What they are doing is investing in schools, investing in infrastructure, investing in high-performance computing. And that gives them entree to things like rare earth minerals that they need to fuel, which fuels the technology economy. It gives them entree to markets. It gives them control around the world. So they are doing this with investments, and they are building partnerships and friendships. They're not creating enemies.
Well, just to make it a little less altruistic than that comes out,
they
don't care a fig about human rights, and that's how they got such a foothold in Africa, where they went after resources, and unlike the United States at the time, had no accounting for human rights. Mm-hmm. That's number one.
Well,
and they have been using their press policy for world dominance for a really long time. Their view of the media is that you advance the needs of the party, and all journalists serve that. I've done a lot of work, as you know, overseas in journalism. I would never work in China because I felt like I would be working for the government.
Right. Well, I agree with you, but the way that they come in and take control of resources is not by bombing people.
Right. There's basically two strategies that we're seeing worldwide. You either approach by creating division, like Russia, or what we are seeing here, you know, for in Charlottesville, for example, or you attempt use the guise of diplomacy, I suppose, as we're seeing, for example, in China.
And they're taking control, and they are taking advantage, but they're not doing it with bombs.
But I do think Rosemary's point is extremely well taken. Look, this is a dictatorship.
Absolutely.
And it is, in many ways, if you are working in China and you cross the government in any way, you're very likely to end up in jail for a long time. So we can talk about the short-term strategy of what works, as opposed to if it all worked out for them, what would the world be like?
Right. And then there's
Labor policies and such are nothing to be admired by any means.
And then there's the bullying model of Russia. The problem is that Putin does it so much better than Trump does. He truly is evil and smart and has a strategy. I don't think Trump has a strategy. Yeah. I don't think he's that smart. And Putin doesn't care about winning personally. He's learned that you stay low-key, you put your old friends in. And you
don't let your enemies run for a president.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you stop all threats. And so Trump does neither one of the models very well.
But I don't think he understands the world, though. Alan, do you think?
No, but I think the issue here is the history of these countries. I mean, here is Trump really despised in this country by so many people because he has taken on the ethic of democracy and is trying to change it as we understand what a democracy is. In the old Soviet Union, the new Russia, pretty close to each other, run by the autocrat the way that it is, they have a history working for them that doesn't exist in the United States.
Right.
And I think there's...
And they take the very long view, as does China.
Exactly,
they take the very long view.
Yeah.
Okay, so... we heard from Peter, our old friend, who says, happy holidays to all. We came to Massachusetts, Northampton, for Christmas, but we only heard about the purchase of the Mount Greylock Tower by WAMC this morning on the roundtable. My check will be in the mail later today, and that's in bold letters. This reminds me of Save Our Station campaign way back when, SOS. All full-time and seasonal listeners should contribute to this vital fund drive. My cousin Lisa Buttenheim is the head of the UN Peacekeeping Force in the Congo, a very tough and scary place. This costs the cost to all of us is pennies. The Trump threats to our funding of UN shows his 19th century political views. Keep pushing against this dreadful president, please. Happy New Year to all. And that's from Peter.
Cheers to the work that she's doing. That's tough work.
Okay, and then from David, clarification of the tower. Panel, I understand your need for the tower. However, it would be much more clear if you mentioned that you're referring to the broadcast tower that delivers the news information to all of us here in the listening area. Very good point, David. And certainly that is the major tower of the entire WAMC system. And if it was gone, we would be gone with the kind of panel that you're listening to right now.
Yeah, I don't know what other tower we would have.
There's the War Memorial Tower, I think, maybe. That you're not purchasing a landmark, you're purchasing a broadcasting mechanism.
It's the beacon. You know, I was looking at the definition of beacon, and it really, literally and figuratively, is a beacon.
Yeah.
And which enables the connectivity, which defines what the station is, really. But it's the beacon that
You know, we got a ton of... Go ahead. Alan.
First of all, we got a ton of Rosemary.
Well, that's what I said. All the letters are welcome back, Rosemary.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Great. Yep. And you'll be here tomorrow.
Yep.
And then you got to leave, right? You can't make Friday's show.
No, I could do Friday if you need somebody.
I want your Friday.
Okay, yeah.
I'll be here Friday. I didn't even ask because I thought you said you were leaving Friday.
We'll take as much as we can get.
Oh, that's great. Excellent.
Sue says, two short questions. What has Rosemary found most surprising about the reporter she is working with in Jordan? And two, will you be able to rent out a portion of the purchase tower? Yes, the answer to that is a little complicated in that there are already tenants on that tower. There's only so much that a tower can hold in terms of its, quote, load. So that's important to remember. And the deal that has always been in effect is that the state, the Commonwealth, gets half of whatever anybody pays for rent on the tower. Mm-hmm. Okay, and over to you, Rosemary, for question number one.
Well, the thing I think that surprised me the most about Arab journalists is not the low skill level. That's kind of global in places that have never had a tradition of journalism, of independent thought. But it's the fear. These are they work under governments that don't want you writing about them. I mean, they won't write about the king or the military in Jordan. They can get into real trouble if they do. And this leads to a kind of self-censorship that I seem to be fighting every day, a reporter who has documents proving that a company, I won't go into the details, but was doing bad. And so it calls for the comment, and the executive said, if you print this, you're going to be in trouble. Don't you dare use us in this story. Mm. So she took the name out.
We are super lucky to practice as journalists here in the U.S. I mean, I did a newsroom tour over in Pakistan and had to go through barbed wire fences and concrete barriers and had armed guards with us. And we were just travelers there. We went to a newsroom that had lost 3 of its members just about a week before we arrived there, because journalists are talk about human rights and just the real threat to democracy, you know, people getting killed to do their jobs, essentially. And you disappear. You get beaten severely. I talked to an editor who came to basically a gentleman's agreement with one of his, a lackey for someone who did not want him to be writing about them. And he said, you know, you can go after me, but he's like, you leave my family alone and I'll leave your family alone. And that was the agreement. And
every day I'm amazed at the risks taken by Mexican journalists,
absolutely,
Russian journalists. Pakistan's a bad example because there are barbed wires around the schools there. All institutions are under attack there.
So let me remind everybody, we have a president of the United States who has declared that the press in this country is an enemy of the people, and who admires the strong men around the world.
Yep.
So the question that keeps circulating in my mind as I listen to the brilliant panel this morning is, if he had his way, what would happen to the press of this country?
Look at Fox News. That would be it. Fawning, flattery, suppression of things he didn't want. You'd wait until he made announcements before coming. And he doesn't even have press conferences anymore. So it would be Sarah Huckabee coming out.
That's a terrible precedent, though. I think that started with previous administrations, too. If you look at the number of people in the press pool in the White House, I mean, it's dwindled dramatically.
I think it should have been done away with. I hate the whole idea of the White House press corps. They just sit and wait for announcements. Go out to the agencies and get the news ourselves. And especially now, we're going to sit there and give Sarah, give her an audience, ignore her, boycott Sarah.
But I think that the challenge is, I mean, there's a big media issues in terms of ownership and, where journalists are allowed to go these days, whether just because people are trying to block them or fiscally.
And you know, there was a great piece on CNN this morning in which somebody was using a camera behind a tree to get the president playing golf, which he denied he was doing, by the way. But then they were able to do this. But your point is so well taken that there's this guy behind a tree, and you can see the leaves in the way, but you can see the president playing golf.
Well, compared to Pakistan and Jordan, we have it better. However, the Wall Street Journal is experiencing an exodus of investigative reporters right now because Rupert Murdoch has maintained that we will not be attacking Trump. And so they're pulling their punches. and editorializing and against Mueller, for example. Yeah, and the Post has also lost a lot of credibility because it's seen as only attacking Trump rather than doing their job. Things are not good in the media business either. We have troubles, and there's not an appreciation among Americans of what it means to have an independent media.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry. Can I pause you there?
Absolutely.
Okay. look at Ray's face and just realize I need to take a break.
Hey, Ray.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll be right back after news with Ray Graff after this. I know we're taking a little time between the breaks, but we're catching up with Rosemary. She's got all kinds of good stories to tell. So it's fun. We're having a good time.
I want to hear about the people and the food. That's in the culture. That's what I want to hear about. The people, the food, the culture.
My favorite people are the women, you know, who, yes, they're oppressed, but there's like this subculture of liberated women. They do, you know, they go out on dates that their parents don't know anything about, and they drink, and they take off the hijab sometime and go dancing. I love them. I've become the godmother to all the young women in the office.
Beautiful. We have some letters, and we'll get to those, and then we'll move on to some other topics.
Bo says, tower clarification still needed. Some confusion about details of just what the tower is remains. It would behoove our mission to be clear about it. Did WAMC purchase the whole physical tower or a certain amount of antenna space on the tower? The whole tower. The whole tower. The whole tower goes into... Hellman's Real Mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise, right.
The difference is significant. It's the whole egg, the whole egg.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's
the whole egg.
You're hearing this because of the tower. Isn't it as simple as that?
This is really going to clear up stuff. Bring in Hellman's Mayonnaise. Yeah.
For instance.
That was clear as mud.
Didn't you miss this, Rosemary?
I did.
For instance, and I haven't mentioned Fire Island once.
For instance,
if the tower is entirely owned, the owner, WMC, can further collect revenue from rents and leases. Please clarify. Yes, we bought the whole tower. Yes, we can rent it out. But there is, and I've said this twice already today, but there is a very finite amount of space on that tower without altering the so-called load. And every time somebody wants to buy some space from you, you got to have a load analysis made of whether that's going to hurt.
It's a broadcast tower.
It's a broadcast tower.
A signal allows people to hear this.
Isn't it safe to say that there already are entities on there, and they will continue to be tenants to us as opposed to the former owner?
Yes, and may I mention, and by the way, it won't cover everything.
Right.
But may I mention also, because I think this needs clarification, when I said before that half of the rental goes to the Commonwealth, it does, but the Commonwealth, we may own the tower, but we don't own the land under the tower. Mm-hmm. That gets rented to us. So basically, when we pay them half of that, we are paying them for the use of the land. Okay,
right.
Is that clear?
And that's Mount Greylock, right?
Mount Greylock, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. It's a wonderful place. Okay, and then hello says Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Hello. Welcome home, Rosemary. Thanks for all your insights this year on Facebook. Keep up the good work. Yeah. Everybody loves
my boss at the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, a wonderful outfit, is not so enamored of my social media output. Finds it high schoolish and frantic. So I've cut back a lot on, and maybe altogether, on politics. Oh. I don't cover Donald Trump. I could never cover Donald Trump because I really have a strong distaste for him. That's inappropriate in journalism. But you have to be careful of anything you say now.
Sure. Alex says, so great to have the smart and spunky Rosemary back in the house. Miss her in these scary times, and that's from Alex. Okay.
And smart then, and spunky. It sounds like my granddaughter. I have to do, hello, Gemma. I think she's listening.
Oh, hi, Gemma. Aww.
That's lovely.
Kathleen says, Trump, GOP, and the Russian thumbs on the scale. Hello, panel, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year
to you.
Great to have Rosemary on board today. Does anyone else wonder if the White House and most of the GOP are sitting on their hands as to doing something about Russian meddling because they think and hope that Russian will help GOP candidates win in 2018? Huh? Does anyone
else?
Yeah,
there's a big story about how the Russians never stopped meddling in election affairs, and that the Trump administration appears not to be doing anything about that. I did not think it had to do with protecting GOP candidates in 2018,
no.
But he doesn't want to draw attention to the fact that it's happening at all, because it would indicate that perhaps his election was not completely legitimate.
Yes, and 2018 is a big number for an awful lot of people. All of the analysis I've been reading, and I hope it doesn't make people too cocky, is showing that there's going to be a Democratic wave in 2018. But things can change, and if people are lulled into complacence, that would not allow that to happen. But there was something else that happened this morning, and I know Joe's going to take us there because I know Joe. And what it is the fact that North Korea— Right? Now, the Russians have checked in this morning saying that they will negotiate on our behalf and everybody else's behalf with North Korea. Now, these are the same Russians who fixed the election, right? And these are the same Russians that are at the bottom of the investigation of Trump by Mueller and the others. So now we're going to trust those Russians to do negotiations with North Korea in our behalf. Something stinks.
I have a question for this panel I wanted to ask you. In 2018, I had always heard, and I still think, that it would be very hard for the Democrats to take over because they not only have so many seats to win, but their own seats that they are defending, that they have to get back. They have to not only win more, but they have to protect the ones they have, and many of them are
House
in
or Senate,
Trump country. Both. I'm talking about both. I think the Senate is easier, but what do you think? Can they do it?
And thank you. You're exactly right. And there are more Democratic seats to defend than there are Republican seats. So your point is well taken.
So in the euphoria after Alabama, which let us remember was a really squeaky margin, considering we were dealing with the worst candidate in American history, is that really enough for this euphoria that, the Democrats are going to get it back? And I don't know.
Well,
I'm not buying it.
Well, first of all, there is contemporary polling. Right. And the polling.
I remember that with Hillary Clinton. Yes.
Yeah.
Polling.
Well, good
you're
point.
A much bigger fan of that than I am. You always have been, Alan.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of polling. But there have been an extraordinary number of retirements, particularly Republicans who are moderates. And so if there are moderate Republicans retiring, those districts are more, they're not necessarily swing, but more winnable, as opposed to very, very conservative Republicans retiring. Mm-hmm. But they're, 32, 34 now that have announced already?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so that puts it more in the realm of possibilities. And there are also reportedly a lot more Democrats contending for seats.
Every seat.
Yeah, they're putting
every
up
seat.
A candidate.
And
every,
serious,
that's good.
Very, very strong candidates.
Lots of women.
And a lot of women. And so they say that combination of a much stronger candidates contending in seats that had been barely contended in the past, and these moderate Republicans retiring makes it possible. But you never know, things can
change. And the fact that there are an awful lot of Democrats who are willing to stand up right now shows that at least they think this is going to be a Democratic year. You don't run for an office unless you think you have a shot at winning it. Although there are those.
I think Fazio and Stefanik have really been targeted by an organized and well-funded movement in New York.
No,
that will be interesting.
Well, I think they're five.
Not only in New York, too. Either.
Right. Yeah. These are, I think those are two key races nationally, particularly Faso is a key race. There's some five seats in New York and several seats in California that are considered some of the make or break for winning back that.
Okay, so there's 50% of the people who don't vote in presidential elections are most well-attended elections, right? And of those 50%, the way that elections are won or lost in America is who's excited at a particular time. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm saying the Democrats in a way that we have not seen. See, Rosemary, I take some issue cautiously with you.
Because I could, bite your hand off?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Which is over this particular election, because I think a lot of people woke up for that Alabama election who would ordinarily not have come out. We saw a lot of people of color. We saw a lot of people. Now, if that 50% pot who has traditionally stayed out of elections comes in now, it's going to be a Democratic wave.
Well, I think it's it's you have to watch a number of factors, right? So you definitely have to watch those populations. I think what was unique about the Alabama election was the attention and detail that, you know, Doug Jones looking at some of the issues and really understanding the constituency and also the wave and the clamor for change in Alabama.
He was a good candidate.
He was the right candidate.
He's absolutely a solid candidate. But I think you can't ignore, and talking like you were just talking about the New York races, who else is a part of, it's not just within state lines, rather. It's, you know, across the country, outside influences, outside, you have a lot of grassroots groups from the Berkshires. People from the Berkshires have been coming over to New York, knocking on doors, saying, "Don't vote for Faso," because of their beliefs and their efforts to change things. And in Alabama, if you follow the dollars, I think that's going to be huge to source the money that's funding a lot of these campaigns across the country and where the dollars are coming from. And you're going to see a lot of them are going to be coming from out of state, I believe.
And I want to go to one point that Rosemary is supporting what Rosemary's saying, and that is a lot of these legislatures are in Republican hands, and they've been gerrymandering like crazy in these congressional districts. Wow. So it's not as if you're going to have fair fights in all the districts. You're not. You're going to have an overwhelming wave, what political scientists call a realigning election in order for this to happen.
A tsunami. But I also think the barometer is not so much Alabama, which was a great win, but I think it's Virginia, not just the governor, but it's the down ballot races that you saw in Virginia and, perhaps winning or at least tying the House of Delegates. But I think what we really, between now and then, there's some critical debates that are going to happen in the next couple of weeks, critical debates on health care, on budget priorities, because at some point they have to
Social Security.
On Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, on what kind of infrastructure program you're going to have. But I think this budget, if they get these deep, deep budget cuts that they're looking for, and if they continue to ignore child health care and things of that sort.
Well, one other thing, and that is Trump is now talking about getting along with the Democrats. Now, what's that about?
Polling.
That is about the fact that he is smelling an overwhelmingly big defeat in 2018. He's really worried about that. Right. And so now they're going to raise, infrastructure. And that's going to be, they'll reach out to Schumer, and some of us are worried a little bit about Schumer, reach out to Schumer and say, we'll build a lot of stuff for you, and this will show that we can all get along.
Wait, you're worried about Schumer? You were a big supporter of his when we spoke.
Was.
What's happened?
Well, I think he has to be, stronger. I think he has to be stronger. I think he has to really be able to give it to Trump, and he hasn't been doing it.
Perez, Pelosi, Schumer, horrifyingly bad Democratic leadership. Not seeing it.
I won't agree with you there. But
you won't agree?
I think Pelosi is, she knows how. I think she's not the best communicator, but she's having other people step forward and communicate. More recently,
who?
You see some of her other leadership. But what she can do is count votes. She knows how to hold her caucus together.
She has a skill with that, I grant
that's
you.
What she
but
knows
that's not
how to
what
do.
I think the Democrats need right now. They need a message, and they need attractive candidates.
Yeah, they don't have
the
a
best
message.
One they had was Franken, and he had to go. I was supported that. So who?
Well, I think what the article that Joe sent out, too, about the AGs sort of banding together. You have
the Schneiderman story is fascinating.
And in our state, we have Maura Healey, who's filed, tons of lawsuits and sort of joint AG lawsuits against this administration.
And in California, Xavier Barrera.
Absolutely.
Very nice, except let me remind you of Preet Bharara.
Yeah.
Trump has a big card against him, and that's he controls those appointments. Mm-hmm.
Although, I could say, this to Alan's point, too, I guess, of... even if there is a tidal wave that we've been hearing about in 2018, this is a president who, in tweets over the weekend, just turned things around and said, "Look, I didn't even support Roy Moore. I supported his opponent. I never knew. I never thought he'd win." I mean, he just says
whatever.
And you wonder if it ever is going to stick. Again, we go back to that base. I don't know. I found myself one of the things that frustrated me over the weekend is that I realized that we have been living in these circumstances for well over a year, if not 2 years, and but a year almost as president of the United States. And I think I would be used to it by now, but I still just get indignant and start screaming when I hear things about, you know, just it's stupid stuff. It's like this whole thing about him taking credit for Christmas. Really? Like, what the hell? How did that happen?
Well, you know, in our house, Roselle, who is certainly the better of the two of us, has put up, blown up his famous statement on the radio about what he does with women.
And it's like embroidered on pillows in the living room.
Oh, that'd be great. That's a sampler.
I love that.
It takes most of a full door.
I love that.
It's just unbelievable.
Roselle, I want one.
There was the gentleman who put that, who put it on a plaque and put it, the whole dialogue, put it on a plaque and put it where the Access Hollywood bus stopped a marker, but they made him remove it, unfortunately.
There's a wonderful article out this weekend by a journalist under Chavez in Venezuela, and he goes, you will never bring down a populist like a Chavez or a Trump with a scandal, because his supporters, still around 40% of the population in this country, don't care what he says. They like the outrageous lies. They like that he's out there thumbing his nose at progressives and at people who thwarted them and forgot them in the past. We're never going to get ahead unless we begin thinking like them. Or unless, like Chavez, there's natural causes and he dies.
But I think that there's some... I'm sorry.
I just wanted to go back to Eric Schneiderman for a moment and to say, I don't care what his motives are. I don't care if he wants to be governor, and should be, because there's some people who think he'd be a much better governor than what we've got now. Because, you know, if he's doing all of these lawsuits, hundreds of lawsuits, if he's going out and he's facing the enemy, he's doing more than most people are, and good for him.
What people care about is their kitchen table economics, and they care about their kids' future, and they care about basic fairness. And I think that if they begin to understand that he has enriched himself and the people around him with his tax bill at their expense, I think that that's going to be very troubling for people, and that the budget cuts, the inevitable budget cuts that are going to be required to pay for this huge, massive transfer of wealth that they've just orchestrated, that's going to affect people's basic economics.
But not for years. Despite Ivanka, who goes out and says, oh, you're going to thank us in, what did she say, in February when you're filling out that postcard for your taxes, foolish woman. I think it's going to be years, at least three, before we begin to feel the impact of that tax scam.
If you're going to just change the narrative whenever it turns on you and say, and make a positive or a negative into a positive, as the administration does continually, and breaks down all the institutions, journalism being one of them, the FBI being another, whenever anything happens, you just change the subject. But back to your other point, without any Democratic leadership on the other side, screaming and yelling and saying, look, mm-hmm. where are we?
Right. I agree.
Well, and I think that's the strategy of division that is being leveraged in this country right now. And I think if you observe anything that's happened within the Democratic Party in the last election, and you know how, again, there's so much splintering between belief systems and opinions, that it's hard to, there's no true Democratic Party.
I have gone over my time. I apologize, but thanks to the wonderful panel for everything. I appreciate it. And Rosemary, we'll see you tomorrow.
Yep.
WAMC.org to make sure that tower happens.
Excellent. Are we? If we skip BBC, how far can I go for a second, or what do you want me to do?
Dead okay. air is all.
And then
good.
What? And then what time can I? What time do I need to get out if we skip BBC? Okay. All right. So we have a minute. Then.
Go ahead. I was just going to say that the news this past year has made me realize how much we flip flop. To me, good guy or bad guy, or call me rather, good guy or bad guy. I didn't like him when he was going after Hillary. I don't like him now. I think he's a narcissist, and yet he's kind of a hero because he's thwarting Trump.
Well, he's saying all this stuff.
Trump and. Sessions, same thing. It's like, who are the good guys and who are the bad guys anymore?
To Alan's point earlier, WAMC.org. Please. You can always give us a call, 1-800-323-9262. Jen, lovely to see you. We'll see you next week.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year to you, Teresa. Cheers. And Rosemary and Alan. We'll see you all tomorrow on the panel. We'll be back after this.